Hello, you're welcome to Inside Education. Our website is insideed.com. I'm Sean Delaney and I'll be your host for the next 30 minutes. On a previous programme, I introduced you to the primary teacher and philosopher John Doyle. John spent most of his career teaching primary school children in St Bridget's National School in Castleknock. I was a student teacher in John's class in the mid-1980s and we've kept in touch over the years. John retired from teaching a couple of years ago and shortly after he retired, I recorded a series of interviews with him over a number of weeks. On this week's programme, I'm going to bring you some of John's reflections on using films with children in primary school and on his thoughts about the 1999 primary school curriculum and about planning for teaching. One of the films that John has used with his class over the years is the film Shane, a western where a mysterious cowboy tries to settle down with a farming family. So I asked John how he goes about using a film such as Shane with the children in his class.
What we generally do is I teach the film. In other words, it's not an entertainment, it's an initiation. So I choose any film I show, I choose it. I would sooner show very few films very intensely than many films vapidly. I never use film, ever, to entertain children. Never. So on a wet day, for example, I would never show a film. Say they're in class during lunch. No, they would play chess, but they would not look at a film. So how do I show a film? I take my time. It's the way we read the book. It's precisely the same. We show a little, and then I stop it. And then we talk about it. What have they seen? What have they felt? What have they noticed? A lot of it is listing impressions, and listing features. And then going back maybe and looking at that bit again. Because it may have raised some questions, and then maybe it might answer those questions. Again, what we're doing is we're constructing an imaginative landscape. We're constructing landmarks. So, you know, in one day, we might only see half an hour of the film. And I might take a lot of time to show that half hour. It'd be punctuated so often with discussion and comment and insights and predictions that we just have to keep going back, and what I would do is go back and play it all from the beginning again. So each time we go back, we start at the beginning, and then it takes longer to get to the point we're at. But really they're seeing it as a whole story. It's a wholehearted participation in this story. And little by little they begin. It's how to articulate, say, character, how to articulate predicament, situation, how to articulate the where and the when, what's life like, what are the possibilities in this life, what are the difficulties. I try to pay attention to villains as well. Who are they and why do they approach things in the way they do? So it's, again, it's hard to say. Each time I do it, it's different. It grows slowly. And then at the very end, when we've seen the whole film, children can, I always have a video of it or a DVD, and they can borrow it and take it home and show their family. And they love to do that. But also we write. We might take a scene and write about it. Or we might take a character and tell the story from the point of view of that character. They choose. Taking their time. Might take a few days. And I always write, by the way, always, always in school. Not at home, ever. In school. With me.
Why is that?
Well, somehow I think that writing is a very precious thing. When you're learning to write, it's a magical thing again. So many things for me are magical. One must honour the magic. So I would never ask children to write cold. I would only ask them to write warm, through warm up. In other words, there is much magic going around. There's the excitement of the film. There's the excitement of commentaries and differences and different points of view in the class. There's a vividness, and I can go round and look over their shoulder and, you know, whisper a word here and a word there about what they're writing. It's warm. Whereas to do that at home, in a totally different setting, far from that magical atmosphere, is much harder.
And John, for children who are used to looking at films for entertainment only, they must find it a bit frustrating when you keep pausing and discussing and going back over parts of the film.
The truth is, they do. They find it frustrating because they're used to seeing films, you know, in one rush. But little by little, you see, the way in which I show a film is the way in which practically I do anything in school. It has its own pace. And I keep using that image of an imaginative landscape. It's as if we're moving through this landscape, through the year. That's what a year is. A year is a voyage, a journey, a pilgrimage through this magical landscape. So in a way, seeing a film is a microcosm of that. So after a while, they're used to me. They know how I go about things. And they forget about that demand that we must see it all and we must see it now. And we must just move on to something else. They don't move on, they move in, ever deeper in. And they do know that, you know, I will show other films. There are a few films. Again, there are landmarks within landmarks and landmarks between landmarks. Like I might show, as I say, Shane, that's just an example. But I might show, for example, Empire of the Sun. If Shane is about, among other things, about a boy who loves guns and thinks that the key moment in life is the gunfight, well, Empire of the Sun is about a boy who loves planes, fighter planes, and who thinks the key moment of life is the dogfight in the sky. And in both these films, one thread of the story, a deep thread, is how the boy, each boy, learns otherwise. The way of the gun, the way of the fighter, fighting plane, is not the way. In other words, there's a deep unlearning. Learning and unlearning go together. There's a deep enchantment and a deep disenchantment. And then the question is, what is beyond disenchantment? And that's where I think, for me, that's where wisdom lies. I think all the films I would ever show children, they would be films of wisdom. Anticipations of wisdom. That's what initiation into life means, life's mysteries. How do you meet life's mysteries? That's where heart wisdom is found. Another film I show, just to refer to it, is, say, The Mission, which has no children. There are children, but it's not seen totally through the eyes of a child. There are other films. I just mentioned names like The Truman Show, which for me is the greatest film that I know. And I show that every year. And I am truly amazed that even though I've shown it every year since it came out, I see more in it, and the children see more in it. And they assure me that this is happening. And I say, no, no, definitely not. And then I look again, and sure enough, it is. They've seen more in it. Classes of children are able to see a lot more than a teacher can. So it's a common initiation. And when I say common, I mean the teacher participates in being initiated, just as the children do. So we proceed at a certain pace. It takes a number of, it could take more than a week. It could take 2 weeks. We keep returning to it each day and leaving it, coming back to it and leaving it. And then there's a dimension of writing. There could even be dimensions of drama as we explore particular moments or particular situations and maybe particular roads not taken. There are moments when it could have gone differently, and that might have made all the difference.
On 103.2, this is Dublin City FM.
One of the things that teachers have to do in primary school is follow the primary school curriculum. How do you link the films to the curriculum?
The curriculum to me is like a rainforest. It's rich. There are many birds singing. In other words, I read the curriculum and I reread it and I read it again. And in a way, I make myself at home in the curriculum. In other words, I don't link anything with the curriculum. It's not that kind of thing. I think the new curriculum is very rich and has a lovely pace. It's not urgent. It's not a series of imperatives, as it were. It's a series of prompts and invitations and vistas. And I find many of these vistas very inspiring. I find a new curriculum a curriculum of inspiration and direction. It gives deep direction and deep inspiration. And it's, I would just say, it does invite reading and rereading. But there is a tendency in schools to translate it into tighter forms, into little codes, which kind of, to me, it's almost like it's a rich meal with many courses, many fragrances, many tastes. But you know, you could get all that nourishment in a capsule, you know. And I say that is a tendency to, we don't want to get lost in the rainforest. We actually want to make it a tool.
But John, you describe it as a rainforest, but it is written as a series of objectives, and you could visualize it being taught as a series of, when you achieve this objective, you tick it off and you work through it. You obviously don't see it that way.
The new curriculum is in two parts, and it's not in two parts for nothing. One part perhaps can be read as objectives, although I don't read it that way. But the other part is a series of invitations to teachers.
These are the teacher guidelines.
Well, they're called teacher guidelines. This is the other part, which to me is very, very beautiful. It's a series of prompts to teachers, ways in which you can move the children, move the wave forward up the beach, as it were. And there's so many ways. And if you take the ways there are, for example, for teaching Irish, quite a number of ways, but then the ways for teaching English, or the ways for teaching maths, or the ways for teaching music, they overlap, they duplicate, but they also complement and enrich. And you realise there are so many ways of moving through this landscape. And they're all being, I would say, invitingly presented to the teacher. Now, no one teacher will be able, in my view, to incorporate all those ways into their way of approaching things. No one teacher could. But if you dwell on the new curriculum, dwell with the new curriculum, some of these will become quasi-native to you, which initially may have been strange. They will become native. You'll just find yourself one day buoyant, prompted into a particular zone that you never tried before, and it will seem so right. And once you do it, you may visit it again, and it will become part of you. I'm just saying that second part, full of all these ways, I would say it's practically inexhaustible. And it's only over years of a teaching life that it would be incorporated into. Because the point is, it's not just incorporated into my teaching, it's incorporated into my life. That means, for me, preparing to teach is very, very important. But I don't prepare, what will I teach tomorrow? What does the book say? What's the next page? I actually prepare by reading in my life. That is, I'm interested in so many things which lead in so many ways. And I read and I read. But I find that it's as if somehow behind my eyes, the eyes by which I read, the eyes by which I see, the new curriculum is there. Only because I've dwelt with it and it's native to me. It just helps me read. So I get loads of ideas in things I read, which then find their way into the classroom.
Okay, I want to stay with this for a minute, John, yeah. Because, you know, when most people think about planning, they think about, you know, making out their lessons for the coming week or the coming fortnight. You don't do that. So how do you decide what you're going to teach when you go in on Monday morning?
First of all, I don't think like that. What will I do on Monday morning? Possibly the only Monday morning where there is a definite challenge is the very first Monday morning, or whatever, the first day. One has to begin.
With a new class.
So it's something vivid, something to give them an appetite, but then also something simple, something homely, something that they know they can do. And just in a way, what one is trying to do is to get into stride, find a pace oneself, pace the class, they pace the teacher. We get into stride together. Now, when you do something in general, whatever it is, X, well, I'm never then at a loss what to do next, because X, no matter what X is, X opens out into many things. So if it's on a Tuesday I do X, then my Wednesday is already clear. I just go with X into Y and Y into Z.
But is that because you have been teaching for many years? Is it not very difficult for a beginning teacher to see all those possibilities that you can see when you're on X and going to all these other possible options?
I don't know. You see, you don't have to see everything. And I don't see everything. In fact, I never see everything. you only have to see enough. Enough to go on. Like, that's how we walk.
But what criteria do you use when you're choosing which route to take?
Education for me is initiation into the mysteries of life, into the great world. And the great world connects with us in myriads of threads, magical threads. We are in the world already. So it's quite amazing, I would find, just to mention something and the children respond and they take it places. So am I ready to go? To me, what I always try to do is make it vivid, make it clear, make it, in other words, visual, vivid. They can see it, what we're dealing, whatever it is, as much as possible. They can hear it. They look for challenges in it, moments of truth, and how would one face that? In other words, all my teaching, whenever I'm doing something, I'm looking for what's at stake. What's at stake? What's at stake? Something at stake. Something is at stake here. What's at stake? And how to bring it home to children that something is at stake. And that's what learning is. When children realize that there is something at stake, they're naturally excited. They're very, very interested in secrets. They always want, for example, if I say, here's a secret. No, I don't think I'll tell you. No, you're not ready for this. Of course, that's what they want to know. And I think life is like actually a never-ending array of secrets, pulsing secrets. And some are good and some are not good. And how much do you really want to know? And, you know, Eliot said, you know, humankind cannot bear very much reality. We have to be careful all the time. Just, I reveal, but I'm not, I want them to stay in stride, stay with me, and maybe even go a little bit ahead. And I find that I can feed them, nourish them as they go. I actually don't see a difficulty here. I've never seen a difficulty. The youngest teacher, with very little experience of life, has nevertheless many dreams, and they have received many, many images. They probably, you know, through their own schooling and through home life and, you know, television, films, they have many images. In other words, it's not foreign to them. They've already been on this way. They just have to have confidence in it. In general, I don't find the books have a great sense of the mysteries of life.
Are you talking about textbooks?
Yes.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, textbooks. And, you know, every teacher depends on textbooks, including me. But the question is, to what extent you depend. To me, there are default positions. They are safe. They are, children like tucking into them, provided that they're not the only dish provided. So I've no problem with the textbooks. But I don't feel the need to rely on them or the need. It's, you know, they say that, whether it's true or not, that a hen, if you draw a chalk line, you know, in front of the hen, the hen will be hypnotized by the chalk line and won't be able to leave it. Now, I've never tested that. Is that just folk anecdote? But I'm saying there is an element of that about the textbooks, that the beginning teacher at the beginning of the year is taking up deep responsibility for a class, and they all have these books. And it is easy for these books to intrude like clouds and the sun. There is no sunshine. There are just these clouds. And it can become a grey world. And the teacher feels the responsibility. And it's fatally easy. You are in this book and you open the next page. And the next page. And the next page. And therefore the order of teaching for the year is the order of the books. And if you have a range of books across a range of subjects, you can practically, on the very first day, you can look down the year as if looking down a corridor, and you can plan your whole year week by week, and some teachers do, through the books. The plot is, instead of the plot thickening, it's just the book plot. Now, there's a lot to encourage teachers in that direction. You know, parents, if they pay for books, they do want them to be used. If teachers say there are two or three classes in third or fourth, if they're all using the same books, they can refer to each other. The books become a kind of shorthand. Where are you at? And have you met this problem? How did you tackle that? And in other words, it simplifies everyone's task. But I think it becomes a landscape without landmarks. And I want landmarks. Landmarks of the mind, landmarks of the imagination, landmarks of the heart.
And that was retired primary school teacher and philosopher John Doyle. Well, that's it for this week's Inside Education. You can listen to or download podcasts of previous Inside Education programmes on insideed.com or on iTunes. You can email me at insideeducation@dublincityfm.ie. Thanks to this week's guest, John Doyle. Until the same time next week, this is Sean Delaney signing off. Thank you for listening. Thank you.